very warm evening to you. Hello, welcome to the Book Club. This is Book Club show number 24. This is overall our 155th live broadcast here at Learn Radio Donut. Wowee! It's Wednesday, the 7th of July, 2021, and we have got Sophie Kirtley.
You're listening to Maria, Ian, and Russell. This is the After School Book Club on LearnRadio.net.
It certainly is, folks, and you are very welcome to our show. It's 1 minute past five. The bit of a football match going on this evening. Shall not mention that much more than once, I have to say. Good evening, book clubbers. Great to have your company. We are thrilled. The fabulous Ian is joining us, with us live. You can see him on the bottom there. It's like the Brady Bunch all over again. We'll give you a welcome in just a second. You'll need to Google that if you're terribly young, I have to say. Anyway, it's really good to have your company. Of course, we've got Ian Rocky and we've got Maria Wojciechowska Kaneda there as well, and me, Russell Prue, are hosting the show. We are video casting this evening as well, and you are able to watch us, and you'll be able to get us on YouTube later on this evening. It's been absolutely great this week. I'm having a fantastic week. Maria, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been fabulous. It's getting a little bit colder. I'm kind of wondering whether to put the heating on or not, but I'm just putting a jumper on, you know, just riding it out. I think the sunshine is coming, Russell.
Oh, indeed. Heating goes off, heating goes on, heating goes off, heating goes on. We've had rain, sunshine. It's warm, it's cold. Oh, I don't know. It's like April all over again, I have to say. Ian, welcome back to the studio, my goodness. How are you?
It's great. It's great to be back. Absolutely. Do you know what? It's been lovely. And you say about the heating, October, it's not going on to us. It now, it went off in April. It's not going back on until October. I'm sorry, it can go to -2, but it's not going back on. That's the Rocky rule for
the heating rule.
Rocky rule.
Well, to lower heating bills, and good on it as well. It's excellent. Folks, we love to have your company. Thank you so much indeed. It's really, really good to have you with us. Everything is on our show page. Just go to learnradio.net/bookclub. You'll find today's show page. We are the 7th of July. Click on that, or you could search on Sophie Kirtley and find today's show page. Easy peasy. If you want to text us, all the contact details are on the show page, 078-600-26400. Some of you prefer to send us a text message. If you want to write on the show Padlet, it's busy already, I have to say. Thank you so much. Keep those texts coming. It's good to have Ian with us because he can pre-approve some of those posts as well and get ahead of the curve. Always handy. Help yourself, Ian, to that as well. If you want to email us, don't forget learnradio@andertontiger.com if you want to email us as well. Good to have your company, and use the hashtag if you want to post something. Well, this is our After School Book Club, and we are featuring a brand new book. In fact, it's so new, it's not even out to tomorrow. That's what I like, actually, before it's on the shelf. Love it as well. This is published by Bloomsbury Children's Books, and we're thrilled to have Sophie Kirtley with us once again. I was just recanting with the gang there before we came on air. It is nearly a year and 10 days since we last had her. It's a big thank you to the whole team at Bloomsbury for our lovely books. We have absolutely loved it. Now, Ian's the only one that hasn't got his book because it didn't arrive yet. I think someone's pinched it in the school office, Ian. But Maria, how does your smell?
Delightful.
Ian, how's your PDF smelling there, Ian?
It's PDF smelling digital.
Digital.
It has the scent of sprites and pixels. That's what it has.
I love it. I love it. It's gorgeous. Thank you so much to colleagues at Bloomsbury. A stunning book. Absolutely stunning. Thank you so much for putting it in our hand. It is so much better to enjoy the physical book, to have to say. Not that there's anything wrong with digital books, except that Ian doesn't have a physical book. So the physical ones are so much better. We absolutely loved it. We loved this book, didn't we, Maria?
Oh, I absolutely thought it was amazing. I've read The Wild Way Home last year, and I'd forgotten how beautiful the descriptions are, all of it. I mean, from literally the first word, which is Moth Girl. That's it. I thought we're back in it again. I was just back in. I loved it. It was glorious.
It's good. I'd forgotten how well Sophie writes. It's so empowered. It's so exciting. She's in the waiting room, folks. So don't worry. She will be with us in just a minute. Chomping on the biscuits and the beverages, non-alcoholic beverages served in the waiting room there in our green waiting room. Really important to do that. Of course, we had Sophie on with The Wild Way Home. A lovely book as well. And you can find that on our Stone Age Friday. Do you remember that in Stone Age Friday, we called that show. It was amazing.
It feels like a Stone Age ago.
It was indeed. It was the 17th of July, folks. Go back and find that show page. There's loads of lovely interactions from our listener learners on there as well. Folks, it's a lovely tour through time, as is this book as well. A beautiful opportunity to go back there as well. So back to today's title. It is The Way to Impossible Island. And we thought it was absolutely stunning and really just amazing. Don't forget, today's show is broadcast as well as on the radio channel. So if you're listening in your car, don't watch it and drive at the same time. You can get into a lot of trouble doing that as well, but just listen to us now and download the video later on as well. All the learning resources and a click-through link to the show page, and you can buy and reserve a copy, a signed copy no less, on our show page. Just go to learnradio.net/Sophie Kirtley. Folks, it's still time to get your questions into Sophie. She'll be reading from the book as well. She'll get her to tell you what she's reading from as well. She's going to be reading from the book, and the chance for you to ask questions live on the show. Listen to the answers and then ask more questions. That's the love and the joy that is our interactive show. It's really good. And the purchase link is supplied by Book Nook in Hove. Now, we like them very much. We like independent booksellers. We think they are very empowered and absolutely brilliant. Well, can't waste any more time, folks. Will you please put your hands together? Let's get her out of the green room and get her onto the set now. Hello, Sophie Kirtley. How are you? How's it going?
It is going very well. All the better from seeing you lot. Oh, so thank you so much for having me.
You haven't aged a day, I have to say. As I say to Ian all the time, you've got a great face for radio, Ian, and you look fabulous. All the time I'm saying that. It is lovely to have you back, and thank you so much indeed. Maria.
Thank you very much, Russell. It's just an absolute pleasure to have you, Sophie. I mean, we were just talking about your book before we came on air, and it's just absolutely wonderful. Now, we are wondering why you chose to write the story as Dara, as the main character, rather than Charlie in the first book. I was very excited to see that.
Well, all along, really, even when I was writing The Wild Way Home, I was curious about those characters who were babies in The Wild Way Home. And I really thought, you know, all babies, when they're born, they contain the potential of who they will become in the rest of their lives. So when I met the babies in The Wild Way Home, Dara and Moth Girl, I did think, oh, do you know what? They deserve their own story. I'd love to fast forward into their future and see what happens to them. So really, that was... It almost wasn't a choice that I wanted to write and explore Dara and Moth Girl's experience. It was an intention right from the outset, because the second they were born in the first story, I wanted to know more about them and what they would become.
Oh, thank you so much, Sophie. And it's such a pleasure to know a little bit more about Dara, isn't it, Russell?
Absolutely, it so is. Ian, just before we get into the next question, can you just tell the listeners how they can write on the show Padlets, please?
Thank you so much, Russell. Absolutely, everybody. Yeah, please do jump on the Padlet, everyone. Please come along and head to learnradio.net/Sophie Kirtley. You can come along to the show page today. All you need to do is click on the pink circle in the bottom right-hand corner of our Padlet. There's a white cross there. Click on that. That'll bring up your very own personal post-it note. No charge for that, of course. First name in the top box, and then your message in the bottom box. Get your messages in. Get your questions in for Sophie. We will pose them to her later on in the show. We would love your interaction, as always. So please do head along to the show page. Get your questions in now. Get your comments in now. We'll approve them as we're going through the show. And we would love to pose them to Sophie later on in the show. Wouldn't we, Russell?
We would indeed. You've not lost it. Thank you so much indeed. Sophie, I'd like to ask. Now, Dara likes bananas, not pineapples. What fruit do you like or don't like?
I don't like pineapples very strongly. It's the only fruit I really don't like, and I never have, even when I was a child. And I can eat them. You know, I'm grown up. I can manage it. but I would never ever voluntarily eat pineapple. I just think it's just not the best. Right, I love mango. I like all fruit. At the moment, raspberries, fresh raspberries. Yes. Oh, lovely.
In season. Do you grow your own? Do you grow your own raspberries?
We do. We've got an allotment and we do grow our own. So I was literally picking some yesterday in the sunshine. Always best warm from the sun.
Love it. It's round to Sophie for raspberries, folks. I have to say, well done. I can't grow fruit like that. It just doesn't happen. Ian, you've got a next question for us.
I do have the next question. Thank you very much indeed, Russell. So there are two chapters in the book, Sophie, which do not have titles. Why did you choose to do this?
Now those chapters don't have titles in words, but they have a title which is shown with a way marker. Now, these way markers are actually a really big part of the story, and they are explained as they go through. I'm trying to find one here in front of me, but basically a way marker in the story is like a symbol that represents you, that you place on places around you as you pass through them. So you might carve it onto a tree, or you might carve it onto the wall of a cave. And it's very much part of a kind of Stone Age imagined system. And everyone would have their personal way marker. So if you saw this mark on a tree, you would automatically know who had passed that way. And these way markers come in very handy in the story as it goes through. And those chapters which don't have titles do have way markers, and the whole way through the book these way markers are there just at the very, very start of each chapter. And the way marker shows you whether it's a Dara chapter, so it's told from Dara's angle, or it's a Mothgirl chapter, so it's told from Mothgirl's angle. So in a way, we're sort of learning to read the way markers like we're Stone Age adventurers on a journey. And that's why those two chapters don't have any words, just way markers.
That's so clever. It really is so clever. Engaging to the nth degree. Honestly, Sophie, that's just brilliant. You know, getting people involved completely in the story, totally consumed within the book, which is absolutely lovely. And it's what we've come to love about your writing. Absolutely. Well done. Thank you so much. Now, Sophie's kindly agreed to read for us today, hasn't she, Russell?
She has indeed. Now, have you decided what you're going to read from us? Do we need a pre-synopsis so we know what you're reading for? What can you tell us?
A little bit. I am going to read to you a bit that's from quite far into the book, and it's a chapter called Lighthouse. Now, the reason I'm going to read you this bit, even though, look, you can see if you're on the visual, it's but halfway through, is because I think it really captures a lot of the action. So I'm landing you right in the middle of the story, which means you do need to know a few things. So you can see on the cover, if you're looking, or if you've seen the cover before, it's the story of two children. So Dara, who is from now, and Mothgirl, who's from the Stone Age. The two of them meet, and they both want to go to Lathrin Island, which is the impossible island in the title. They want to go there for different reasons. Now, this chapter I'm going to read to you is from when they're actually on the journey across the sea by night towards Lathrin Island. And this is a chapter which has got Dara's way marker at the top of it. So it's from Dara's angle. It's from his point of view, but both characters are in it. And Mothgirl wants to go to Lathrin Island because she thinks her big brother is there and she thinks he needs her help. And just before this chapter I'm going to read to you, she has seen the beam of a lighthouse. She's from the Stone Age. She doesn't know what a lighthouse is or even electricity or anything. So she sees this light and she automatically thinks it's her brother. He's signalling to her and that he's definitely on the island. She's just said this to Dara when the chapter begins. So I'll start reading to you now. The chapter's called Lighthouse. "Ow!" said Dara, squirming his arm out of Mothka's too tight grip. He followed the line of her pointing finger to where the beam from the east lighthouse swept out like a searchlight across the dark waves. Why would Mothka's brother be out there in the lighthouse on Lathrin Island? He couldn't be the lighthouse keeper. There hadn't been any lighthouse keepers at all since all the lighthouses were automated way back when. It didn't make sense. Are you sure your brother's out there? Asked Dara, giving Mothka a sideways glance. Lathran Island's been uninhabited for about 100 years. Heart lost, she said with certainty. Heart lost. I find heart. I bring heart home. She nodded, like a full stop. Then Mothka lifted the oar and began to paddle towards the island, steady and strong and sure. Dara sat on the boat bench and took careful little gasps of the wild sea air. But no matter how much he tried to convince himself otherwise, he could tell that the pink pill of power, was gone now, and his chest was starting to feel all locked and tight. He wriggled off his backpack, quickly found his inhaler, then closed his eyes and took a puff. Better. He opened his eyes. Mothka was staring at him, curiously, her head on one side. What? He said, embarrassed.
Breath sick, she said with a sharp nod.
Thanks for the diagnosis, Dr. Mothka, said Dara, rolling his eyes. Mothka rolled her own eyes back dramatically, then turned to face the island once more. Silently, Dara did his breathing exercises, relieved and pleased that his heart seemed to be okay again. For now, anyway. He looked at his watch. He just needed to wait 5 hours and then he could take another pill. So long as he took it easy between now and the morning, he'd be fine. Dara counted in his head, and as he counted, he gazed curiously at Mothka, at her black-nailed fingers, at the 5 thin bracelets on her strong arms, and at the animal skins she was wearing, and at her bare feet, and at her wild hair. Mothka, he asked softly, where are you from? Where is home?
Home,
said Mothka, and she turned away from the island and pointed with the oar back across the silvery black sea. Dara stared to where she pointed, all the way back to the mainland, to the moonlit twists of the River Ban, and upstream, right to the furthest hilltop. Mandel? Asked Dara in confusion, pointing to the distant orange street-lit glow of the town where he himself was from. You don't sound like you're from Mandel, Mothka. Are you sure Mandel's your home? Mothka had stopped paddling. She blinked back at Mandel, her eyes clouded and puzzled.
Is home?
She whispered, her head on one side. Uncertain suddenly as she too stared at far-off Bandel.
Is home and is not home. Home is trees. Home is creatures. Home is...
She shook her head like she'd run out of words. Then she squinted her eyes into the distance and suddenly she grinned.
Ha! She said, like she'd won a battle. Ha! There, my spirit stone. How you not take my spirit stone, Daramurum?
What? Your what? She jabbed the oar, pointing with it far into the distance to where the Lucasade orange streetlight glow rose above Mandel.
Ha! She said again in triumph.
And Dara peered where she pointed. There, clear as a shadow, silhouetted by the neon sky, was the tall, standing stone on the top of the mound in Mandel Forest. The standing stone that was so ancient, people said it had been there since before Mandel was even a town, since... Dara turned and stared, wide-eyed at Mothka. It was impossible. But as soon as he'd thought it, he knew it was true. You're from the Stone Age, aren't you? Whispered Dara.
Mothka looked at him like he was totally stupid and totally crazy. You from Stonage, she said with a toss of her head. Foolish, far Iceland's boy, she muttered under her breath.
Dara's mouth went dry.
How? What? How was it even possible?
But it was. It actually was possible. It actually was real. He was here in a boat heading to Lathran Island with a real, live, actual Stone Age girl. It wasn't how he always pictured it. It wasn't how it was meant to be, but here he was. Dara grinned at himself in amazement. A wave slapped noisily into the side of Pea Green, splashing salt water into Dara's face. Never mind the Standing Stone, never mind the Stone Age, never mind who Mothka really was or what she was doing here. One thing for sure, they had to get to the other side of Lathrin Strait and land the boat safely. Let's go, he said, jubilant and ready. But as he turned, Dara saw something coming fast towards them, something that made him gasp in fear. A wall of sea mist, thick and white as milk. It swallowed them, swift and silent and strangely cold. Dara shuddered. He screwed up his eyes, peering hard, but all he could see was mist and the dim outline of the wild Stone Age girl.
That was fabulous, Sophie. I loved your reading. There's something particularly wonderful about listening to an author reading their own words. And when you got to Lucasade Orange Streetlight, I could imagine that straight away. Couldn't you, Ian? You could imagine that. Oh,
so much. Your description, we're going to come on to that shortly, but your description is absolutely exquisite. I mean, you paint the picture. I always talk to the children in school about being able to paint the picture for the reader, and you just do that exquisitely, Sophie. You so do. It's just a joy to read the words. It really is. It's just incredible. No, absolutely lovely. Thank you so much for reading.
It's lovely things to say.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much. And don't forget, of course, if you want to comment or ask Sophie a question about the book, please do get those onto the palette. You've got a few moments to write on our show page. Head to learnradio.net/Sophie Curtley to find today's show page. Pop us a message on the Padlet. As I said earlier, click on the pink circle. You can do that very thing right now, because coming up in a minute, we've got some music for you and you've got time to get your messages on there. And there are some messages on there already. And also coming up later in the show, we are going to read out our crazy biscuit inventions and unusual biscuit names. So get thinking about those and pop them on the Padlet. You've heard a few already on the show, probably get the idea. And we've got a song for you now. Great piece of music. What have we got coming up first then, Russell?
Great. We've got some Fleetwood Mac. We've tried to get some theme music to go along with the show, folks. This is Go Your Own Way. I thought it would just be perfect. We're back after this, folks.
Listening to Maria, Ian and Russell. This is the After School Book Club on LearnRadio.net.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for being in touch. You're listening to LearnRadio.net. It is now 26 minutes past five, and we've got some wonderful comments on the Padlet. Thierry and Andre have made a comment. Thank you so much. Andre says that Miss Sophie has a voice and accent like Siobhan, who is a medic in our unit, and we like hearing her reading. Well, that's a lovely comment. Thank you very much, Thierry and Andre. Ian, what else do we have on the Padlet?
Thank you so much, Maria. Yeah, we do. Jamie says, that was amazing. Please can I ask a question? Did you use any real-life islands for inspiration?
What a good question, Jamie. I absolutely did. Now, when I was a girl, and this links into the question that Thierry and Andre, or the comment Thierry and Andre made as well, that where I'm from is Northern Ireland. And where I'm from in Northern Ireland is the North Coast. So a lot of what I wrote about in The Way to Impossible Island is very much set where I grew up. And there is an island, a really big island, off the north coast of Ireland, and it's called Rathlin Island. And the whole time I was growing up, when I was a little girl, I wanted to go to this island. I just thought it looked really, really fun. And for one reason or another, we never actually did. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I got to visit Rathlin Island for the first time. And it is an incredible place. It's very wild, quite barren. There aren't many trees because it's right on the edge of the Atlantic. It's so windy and the rocks there are quite jagged, and it's an incredibly atmospheric place. It's also somewhere that's really important for wildlife, because a lot of migrating birds go there to nest and to breed, and there are lots of very rare species on this island because of where it is geographically. And so my island in The Way to Impossible Island is called Lathrin Island. You can see what I did there. And a lot of it is based on Rathlin Island in Northern Ireland. Now, Rathlin is much bigger and people live there. It's inhabited. This island, my one in the story, is an uninhabited island. But I've stolen lots of bits from real-life Rathlin Island. I've stolen some of the creatures, the wildlife that I mentioned a moment ago. So there's a really important part of the story is based on a myth that Dara really, really loves. He's got a book of myths all about Lathrin Island. And one of the myths is the myth of the golden hare. Now, in real life, on real Rathlin Island, there is a golden hare, and it is an actual real animal. It's a really special kind of subspecies of Irish hare with fair fur and blue eyes. Can you imagine seeing a hare with blue eyes? And so the golden hare in the story is based on that real creature that lives on that real island.
Wow.
So a very long answer to a very good question.
No, it's a lovely answer as well. Lola asks, do you have any pets yourself, Sophie?
Yes, Lola, I do. I have two cats and I love them dearly. They're quite old now, I've realised, and they just sleep a lot. They're very unentertaining. And I sometimes try, if I'm doing a video for a school or for children or something like this, I try to get my pets to come and sit next to me and look nice and decorative and look really cute. They'll never, if you've got cats, you'll know, they'll never do what you want them to do. So much as I would love to have my cats be a very pretty prop, they would ever would, but they're really lovely. Their names are Dizzy and Dude. They're my two cats, and they're really lovely.
Dizzy and Dude, I love it. Maria, have you got another question on the Padlet there?
Oh, thank you very much. So that's lovely listening about your cats. I should have named my cat a little bit differently. My cat's called Monkey, and unfortunately he is. He's not allowed in the studio during this time, but, you know, cats do exactly what they want. Now, Megan has been in touch. She said, I've read The Wild Way Home, and I'm looking forward to this book when it comes out. Will there be any art activities linked to it, like the Stone Age necklace you made last year? Oh, yes, I remember that you made that. That was wonderful. Yeah.
Wow, I am so impressed that you've got it all covered there. We've got art activities, reading, amazing. We haven't done any special videos or anything like that directly connected in to The Way to Impossible Island, but there is going to be a pack which is going to be put together with lots of different activities that you can do. They're not quite like making the Stone Age necklace. It's more sort of puzzles and quizzes and that kind of thing. But that will be coming quite soon. And as soon as it's all made and it's all looking beautiful, I'll pop that on my website, which is just my name, www.sophiecurtley.com, and there's lots of different resources and things there. Maybe that's where you find the things that you've already done. So I will be doing something connected to that, and Bloomsbury, the publisher, just in the middle of kind of shining it all up and making it all beautiful. So it will appear at some point.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you, Sophie. We could be making some golden hares as well, couldn't we, Ian?
Oh, we've been good. Nothing wrong with making a good go. And there's a lovely crafty cafe activity there on its own, isn't there? Yolande says, I love the reading, Sophie. I tell you, I love the reading too, Yolande. And I tell you, I'm going to drop something in there as well. I noticed, Sophie, that you weren't involved in the audiobook recording. You've got such an amazing reading voice. Oh, fantastic. So how much of it did you, because it says on Audible, I noticed that it was Stephen that read it on Audible. So where is your reading then, that listeners can listen to the audiobook?
I don't know. I'm confused. I genuinely don't know the answer to that, Ian, because I did the audiobook as far as I'm aware. But I'll have to figure that one out. I'm not wholly sure, because it was one of the things I really love doing is reading aloud. And So I was really excited to do the recording for it, and it was actually really good fun too, because it was in a studio and I got to wear, you know, big headphones and sit in a little padded room and stuff. So yeah, I really do enjoy reading stuff out loud. So hopefully it'll be somewhere. I'm not exactly sure how. These things kind of happen and you never quite know how it works out, but I'm pretty sure there is a version of it, because I've had a bit of feedback on it from listeners who got a sneak peek and have said they enjoyed it. So
you've got a fabulous reading voice.
It'll be out there somewhere, Ian.
I really hope so. Thank you very much indeed. Russell, what have you got? What's
thank,
on
thank you. Yolande has been in contact. I love the reading, Sophie. So this is Yolande. Thank you so much. Really good. Maria, what else do you have?
Thank you very much. Now, Maya has said she loved the Wild Way... She loved the Wild Way Home last year with her class. Is Sophie doing any virtual school visits in September as she's teaching the Stone Age next term? What about that, Sophie?
Yeah, absolutely. I love doing virtual school visits. It's one of the real bonuses between the first time I was on Learn Radio and now, is that I have done so many virtual school visits with lots of schools all over the place. And it's just such a treat, because at the moment I'm talking to you, but I can't see you, obviously. But when I'm doing a virtual school visit, it goes both ways. And I absolutely love that. And I can do some quite nice interactive things and all that. So yes, absolutely. If anyone is interested in virtual visits, just to get in touch via my website is the best way to do that. And I've got a brand new one that I'm going to do connected to the Impossible Island, and things about like sort of following your dreams and that sort of an idea. Those sorts of themes that run through the way to Impossible Island. And explore those a little bit.
Great. Thank you very much, Sophie.
There's a link onto the website, folks. If you just go to our show page, learnradio.net/Sophie Kirtley, there's a link to Sophie's webpage there as well. And also a link so you can collect and order yourself a pre-signed copy of the book. How exciting is that? It's out tomorrow, officially, in all good bookshops and less good bookshops as well. I'm sure we'll also be stocking them. Maria, what else do you have on the Padlet there?
Thank you. So we have Thierry and crew. They say that Casey is watching. She's a bit poorly at the moment. And the way markers sound clever. We'll have to find out more and make our own codes here in the Reading Mini Club. We don't know this book yet. They will be a language. No need for French or Anglais. Oh, thank you very much, Thierry. Thank you very much. And Lola comments as well. Did you always want to be a writer?
Oh, that's a good question, Lola. I did. I always wrote stories, and I always loved reading, even when I was a really little girl. It was just the thing that I did and the thing that gave me loads of pleasure. So I don't think I ever dared to think that I would actually be an author. It felt like something that people like me couldn't really do. When I was just a little girl growing up in Northern Ireland, it didn't really seem like a reachable dream. But then as I grew older, I thought, do you know what? I love doing this. Wouldn't it be great to give it a really good go? And at that point, I started getting a bit more confident to show other people the things that I was writing. I wrote a lot of poems and I wrote a lot of shorter stories. And the more I shared them with other people, the more confident I got, until I started to write bigger and bigger and bigger things and get even more confident to share them with people who I didn't even know so well. So yes, I have always wanted to be a writer, but it's taken me a little while to get the confidence to be a writer who can be an author too, and sort of show other people the stories that I have in my head. So I'm very proud that I've made that journey anyway.
Oh, thank you, Sophie. And when you tell people, when you say I'm an author, do you feel very comfortable with that term now?
It makes me giggle inside, Maria, to be honest. it just because there's always, I think, no matter what you do, there's always a little part of you that kind of thinks, really? So yeah, I'm very proud and pleased, but I do giggle inside a little bit.
Brilliant. Ian, there's another comment on the Padlet. Can you read that one for me?
Indeed, we have. We've got Jasper says, wow, can't believe it. Just found out about this book and you have Sophie on the show. You're so good, Learn Radio. Very kind of you. Thank you so much. We'll be listening from South London. Thank you so much. It's been fabulous so far. We are loving having Sophie on the show. We've been treated to a reading and also some of the fabulous book as well. And now we've got some more questions. Firstly, of course, with Russell. Russell, over to you.
Thank you very much. So, Sophie, Fee. Look, by my side, I just love some of the language you've used as well. It's a lovely name for Moth Girl's Wolf, and I just love that as well. What made you choose this name? And of course, we've already had a question from one of our listener viewers. Do you have a pet? And you've answered that as well. So what made you choose that name? Why do you go with that?
Oh, it's funny because initially he was called... what was he called? I think he was just called Wolf initially. And then I thought, oh, that's just so boring. It was just a plain name, because I kind of felt that in the Stone Age, what you would do would be just to label something as what it was. You would describe it. The word for it would be what the animal or object or whatever was. Like, for example, two flints would be fire starter stones. At one point, Mothka takes some fire starter stones out of her pouch, and it just makes sense. Things are described in quite a practical and sensible way. So I started thinking about the qualities that that wolf has to Mothka, and I thought the one thing that he has is constancy. He is always there. He is always by her side. And so I thought, do you know what? Maybe that's what she should call him, by my side, because that is actually what he is. That is the practical description of him. You can see I've got my, if you're tuning in to the visual, you can see I've got my little wolves here. So I did think that that would be a really good name for him. And it was funny because when I was researching wolves, I did quite a lot of reading, but also I went and visited a conservation centre not far from where I live called the Wild Place Project. And it's an amazing place because it has lots of animals that would have been here in the UK in Stone Age times. So, for example, if we were in the Stone Age right now, chances are a guy like this could just be wandering by right where you're sitting right now, wherever you are. So because wolves would have been native to Britain and to Ireland, so it just made sense to me to bring them into the story. But also, if you've got, we had the question if I have any pets. If you have a pet dog, your dog is actually the great, 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 great grandson or granddaughter of a wild wolf, because that's what wild wolves would have very slowly become domesticated and turned into over time. So I love that character by my side too. I'm so fond of him, but that's where he came from and some of the thinking behind him and his name.
Lovely. Maria, you've got a question there.
Thank you very much, Russell. Yes. Now, Sophie, we'd like to talk to you, bring you back to the chapter headings that you were mentioning before. Did you come up with the idea or did you collaborate with your illustrator?
For the pictures, well, we collaborated. It's funny because the illustrator of the cover, Ben Mantle, isn't the same illustrator as the chapter heads. The chapter heads are illustrated by Patrick Knowles, who does the lettering on the cover, the lovely swirly lettering, and he is also the artist to do the chapter heads. So it's quite interesting, the sort of collaboration that you have in making a book, even with the art. Yes, it was a discussion with me and my editor, who then communicated it to Patrick. And we always had the chapter heads with the sort of tousled grass and the wild flowers. But what was what I thought would be quite fun is, I mentioned the golden hair earlier. The golden hair is really important in the story and quite magical. And if you've ever actually seen a hare in the wild, it gives you such an amazing excitement of a feeling, because it pops out of nowhere and you go, oh, a hare. And then before you know it, it's vanished again and run off. And it gives you this really amazing feeling of having almost seen a little flash of magic. And I wanted that to come through in the chapters where that golden hair features. So if you've got really sharp eyes as you're reading, you'll notice that most of the chapter heads are the same, apart from, the pictures are the same, apart from in the chapters where that golden hair features. So you get a little clue he's going to pop up if you look at the actual chapter head, because I'm flicking through it at the moment, see if I can find one.
Page 75.
Oh, thank you. You see just a little glimpse of him.
Oh, he's gorgeous. I love that.
He is gorgeous. And there's several different versions of him throughout the book, depending on what's happening in the chapter. So I just love the idea of a chapter head not just being there to make it look pretty, but to kind of bring the book another dimension into the book and make it almost feel like the pictures are helping the story and the story's helping the pictures.
Oh, thank you, Sophie, so much. I got so excited when I first saw those little hare ears. I had to flick back all the way through the book and thought, did I miss any of them? Did I not see them? I mean, it was just absolutely wonderful. And thank you for sharing that extra bit of information about the author, the illustrator, and the person who did all the lettering. That's wonderful. And the description as well, Ian, is phenomenal, isn't it?
Oh, this Sophie, this is something that I just love about you as a writer, is your ability to describe so beautifully and eloquently. And it is, again, in this book, it's delightful. You know, you hint that the autumn beckoned with a golden leaf twirl, a wave licked the hem of his shorts, Dara's heart fluttered like a moth in a jar. I mean, that's just so such imagery there in just a few sentences. Where did you get your ideas from, and how would you encourage young writers to get their ideas when they're writing?
It's funny, with description, one thing that I've really learnt, and I think is actually quite an easy trick for young writers to do, and it's all about the power of verbs. That sounds really teachery and boring, doesn't it? But if you're describing, you kind of think it's got to all be about the adjectives, don't you? It's got to be about the bright blue, glistening lake or whatever. But actually, a description is so much more fun, I think, if you bring it to life through whatever you're describing, through what it does actively. So I always think quite hard about the verbs that I use when I'm doing a description, so that whatever is happening is in motion, is actually sort of actively getting on with stuff. And there was one of the ones you read there, Ian, that was a good example of that. I can never think these things off the top of my head, but I think it was like a swirling leaf or something or other.
Yeah, it was a swirling leaf twirl.
Yeah, so you know, the idea of that movement of a leaf. So I'm not just describing a leaf sitting there being a leaf, it's a leaf doing something. So if you can make everything do something in your stories, then it'll make them more exciting to read, because descriptions can feel very still, like you're just looking at a painting rather than looking at something that's actually happening. So that's a top tip I'd say for descriptive writing. Make it move, make it noisy, make it do stuff.
That's brilliant. I mean, that for young writers, that's just fantastic. Certainly something I can share, you know, with young people at school, is to make your writing more dynamic, doing just that. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sophie. Russell, you've got a question.
I have indeed. I just want to just drop back on the Padlet there. Thierry and Genevieve have been in contact there. Have you ever seen a rabbit with ginger hair? Thierry asks. At fur brackets. Well, yeah, that would be fine. We saw one time when we were out walking. The other ones are normally brown. Brown as well. We see white tails when they run away. So have you seen a ginger hare, Sophie?
What brilliant observations from you lot. That sounds amazing. No, I have not. And I would absolutely love to have that experience that you have had of just noticing and thinking, oh, look at you, you're a bit of an unusual kind of a creature. And I love also when you described the way a rabbit runs away, you just see the little white tail bobbing. I love that too. No, so I have not seen one of those, but I would absolutely love to. And actually, it's interesting because the idea of an animal like that ginger rabbit that you described, who's a little bit different from everyone else and from all the other rabbits in his warren, and that's an idea about being a bit different and actually accepting that and celebrating that, is a big theme in The Way to Impossible Island. And it's one of the things that I think is just really important in life as well. So it's one of the messages in the book, probably because it's one of the things that I believe in as well. So I think seeing something like that must be very lucky and special.
Brilliant.
Congratulations.
Absolutely. It's really good. Thierry, thank you so much. Always good. Maria, you've got a question there.
Thank you very much, Russell. So we would like to ask you about the legendary story about the golden hare. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. Did you create this, or does there have some element of truth from Northern Ireland and your childhood?
Well, the legends, the true legends of Lathrin Island, which is the book of myths and legends that Dara has and really believes in, up until a certain point at the start of the story. And those legends are based on a real mixture of things. Some of them are 100% Irish myth. Like, there's one of the legends that Dara mentions called the Swan Children, which is based on a famous Irish myth called the Children of Lear. And some of them are totally made up. but made up leaning on something real. So, for example, the myth of the golden hare that you were mentioning there, Maria, totally made up by me, but leaning on the fact that I know there is this very rare, very unusual, pale-furred, blue-eyed golden hare on the island of Rathlin. And I thought, you know, myths and legends, they all come from somewhere, don't they? Mm. They don't just pop out of the blue. They tend to come from, you know, something that maybe happened to somebody once, or a, you know, some a sighting of something unusual that grows into a story. And so I thought, you know, what if I was a Sophie of old, what would I have made of that golden hare? What story could possibly have been wrapped around it if I'd been around a Stone Age campfire, or around a time before TV and radio and all these things, where we just would have made up stories for each other? And I tried to make myself into that kind of past person and make up a myth that would feel like it had always been there. And that's what I tried to do with the myth of the golden hare. But I also wanted it to fit really nicely within the main story that's going on in The Way to Impossible Island, so that the myth could reflect on what Dara's experiencing, and Dara could reflect on the myth and think, oh yeah, that's just like me. So I kind of wanted it to feel very old, but also relevant to what was happening in the book.
Lovely. Thank you, Sophie. And there's lots of research as well, isn't there, Russell, that seems like Sophie's had to do?
Absolutely. And we just wondered, Sophie, where do you do your research?
Oh, good question. I do. I read a lot. I love reading. And sometimes I'm reading online. Sometimes I'm reading books about things. And also I love, you know, getting out there and experiencing stuff and chatting to people and hearing people's stories. So with the research for The Way to Impossible Island, like I mentioned right at the start of our chat, I did go to Rathlin Island. Finally, I got there. And so I got to really see for myself what it's like out there, and to sort of feel all the elements so that I could maybe make my descriptions feel realistic. And I did do a lot of reading of stories that people have told about the island, old diaries and anecdotes that people had told. And because it's been locked down, I wasn't able to get over to Rathlin to sort of pinpoint specific people and to go and interview them or something like that, which is something I would have loved to have done, because I would have loved to have taken people's stories and made them into almost like a book of myths based on the things that people were telling me. But that just wasn't quite possible this time around. But I am planning to do that for future books, to see if I can, you know, put that little bit of reality, sprinkle it in.
Love it. That's great. Absolutely good. We're doing well on time, folks. If we could just jump now to section 17, Ian, there's a question there for you, number 9. If you could give Sophie that, that would just be perfect.
Absolutely can. Thank you very much indeed, Russell. Sophie, the book is all about stereotypes and challenging them, as well as what typifies as normal. Why did you include this concept in the book?
Well, it's just something that I feel is really, really important for everybody, and something that I believe in very, very strongly. And when I was thinking about the two different children, Dara and Mothgirl, I thought, what would have been expected of someone in the Stone Age, particularly a girl? And one of the stereotypes that Mothgirl has to challenge is what's expected of her as a young female in her clan. And what is expected of her is something very domestic. She's expected to do lots of cooking and preparing and helping and generally and looking after the younger members of her clan. That's her role, as is seen. But her personality and her, she's not like that. She doesn't want that role. She wants to get rid of it. And I think that for young people, often, you know, what they, the world they come into has a certain, almost like if you picture a jigsaw, there's a space left and you're expected to fit that gap. And if you don't fit that gap, let's say there's something which you think, oh, actually, no, that's me. I'm this shape, not that shape. Then where do you go? And I really wanted to kind of explore that idea. So Mothgirl, she wants to hunt. She wants to run wild in the forest. Her best friend's a wolf. You know, she's got all these things that make her really, really different. And so what the story what happens in the story as it evolves is she starts to, initially she thinks, oh, I've just got to be what everyone wants me to be. And as the story goes forward, she then begins to question that. And the questioning comes through meeting Dara and through the adventure that they share together. And actually, Dara has a very similar experience with her. So really, I just think it was about people looking at their own perspectives and realizing that actually there's something more than that always, because I think that's really important for all of us to do as we live our lives, try to see things from other people's points of view.
Lovely.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And so brilliantly put as well. And we're wondering, aren't we, Maria, about Dara and Charlie, aren't we?
Yes, yes. I was wondering, Sophie, will Dara and Charlie ever share their own stories of the Stone Age? And, you know, are you able to let us know? Is there a subsequent book that you've planned? You know, maybe Eel Girl or Owl Boy? Can you tell us any sneak previews?
I did love Eel Girl and Owl Boy, even though they're just sort of... They're present within this story, but it's certainly not their story. So I think there is definitely potential for them to move on being almost the next generation of that family. But for me as an author, I am in danger. I'm in danger of turning into Stone Age Sophie. I've spent so long in the Stone Age, which I love, and I really do love, that I think that what I need to do now is to experiment with other things and other places, because it wouldn't be easy necessarily for me to write another Stone Age book, but I would quite like to do something different at this moment. So Eel Girl and Owl Girl aren't going anywhere. Eel Girl and Owl Boy aren't going anywhere. They'll be there if I want to pick up their story at some point in the future. But the next book for me is definitely not going to be Stone Age. It's going to have a little whisper of Ireland in it. It's going to have some myths, some legends, some powerful fairy tales. And it's going to be about families and about friendship. Like it seems most of my books are going to be honest. That seems to be the things that I'm into. But it's not going to be a Stone Age adventure this time. But it will be lots of fun. It's going to be a road trip.
Oh, we'll look forward to that, won't we, Ian?
Oh, absolutely. Can't wait for that. That sounds great. I mean, to be honest, every time you're releasing a book, Sophie, it's absolutely gorgeous. And we really, really look forward to it. So, I mean, what you're working on right now sounds really, really exciting. Russell, we're talking about inspiration as well, aren't we, really?
We are.
Because there are so many places.
With Stone Age Sophie. I love it. So this is your coffee name. I love it. It's Stone. You should, when you order your coffee next... So what's your name? You go, Stone Age Sophie. On the thing. See if they can fit it all around the cup. That would be lovely.
Or just SAS, Russell.
Oh, that would be good. SAS. Love it. A covert coffee. I love it. I love it. And we're just wondering where you get your inspiration from. Where do you draw from all these stories, Sophie?
Well, the Stone Age thing really did come from my own childhood in a way, not because I'm Stone Age Sophie and I grew up in the Stone Age, might I add, but a lot of them come from where I come from. And when I think about my childhood in Northern Ireland, a lot of time spent outside, so the natural world is a massive inspiration for me, but also the past and history and sort of unlocking the like hidden meanings behind things. You know, I'm a great one for finding an old bit of china and wondering, ooh, what plate or cup did this come from? Who drank from it? Where did they live? Constantly sort of questioning things and observing things, but then doing that out and about, but also taking whatever those little thoughts are, writing them down in a notebook, and then later going and investigating them. And often you get yourself on this little path that takes you from one thing to another, where you might see a picture and then think, oh, wonder what that's about. And then you discover it's based on a myth. And then the myth, suddenly you think, oh, I love this myth. It's connected to the idea of twins. And oh, I could put twins in my story. And it's kind of like being on a bit of a treasure hunt. The way I work is that I start off with an idea and it grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And sometimes one idea links into another. And then I feel very happy when that happens.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Now, as well as a book club, folks, we've also got some extended learning ideas, and we love to share these with you because it's not just about reading. It's also about engulfing yourself, immersing yourself in the story and doing a bit of writing, perhaps there. Maria, we've got some great ideas for our listener viewers, haven't we? If they're up to investigation, what can we offer them?
Oh, well, they could choose an animal that you could be named after in the Stone Age. So, for example, you could be Eagle Boy, or Zebra Girl, or my favourite, I would be Dolphin Child. You could find out a little bit more about the qualities of that animals and really look into that. You could investigate that. Now, Ian, what about if you like inventing? What could you do?
If you like inventing, we're not short of things for you here. You could invent your own impossible island. What could you find on the island? How could you reach there by boat? Are there any legends? We've talked about myths and legends this afternoon. Are there any legends that have been told about your island? Give that some thought. Get inventing. But what about communication, Russell? We got something there, haven't we?
Oh, we like that as well. You could imagine that Dara and Moth Girl could continue to communicate through the difference in time. They could have like a time portal. A WhatsApp. What conversations would they talk about? You could write the exchanges as they kind of share facts from their world. What a lovely there. Maria, what have we got next?
Well, if you like collaborating with others, you could work with some friends to find out about the cave paintings around the world from the Stone Age period. You could have a look, see if you could find any of those way markers as well. Yeah. And what about some creativity, Ian?
Oh, love a bit of creativity, Maria. You could design your own way marker like Moth Girls and Dars in the book. Carve it into some modelling clay. Can you make a print from it? You could make a bookmark with your own way marker on it. How about that? And you could slip that inside the Way to Impossible Island. What better way to spend a rainy afternoon? What about if you're in the mood for a bit of thinking and philosophy then, Russell?
Oh, we've got a lot of rainy afternoons at the moment. There's plenty to see, make and do there as well. Well, we'd like you to answer the question. Was it right that Hart had been gone for two moons? That's two whole months there to go hunting for his family. He's absent. He's left them hungry. Was that right? And you could discuss the rights and wrongs of doing that. Wow. What a great idea. Some lovely ideas, folks. You'll find those at the bottom of the show page. Just go to learnradio.net/Sophie Kirtley. You'll find absolutely everything there. Wow. It's been an amazing show. Thank you so much indeed, Sophie. It's absolutely amazing. Folks, all of our shows are published on Buzzsprout as a separate downloadable podcast. We also appear in all your favourite podcast feeds as well, iTunes, Google and Spotify. Just go search for Learn Radio and you'll find all of those there. And I think that's really important. Maria, who do we have on the book club next week?
Oh, we've got a wonderful, fascinating pair. We've got the illustrator Paddy Donnelly, who's been on our show before, and we've got Susanna Lloyd, and they're going to be talking about their book, Here Be Dragons. And you can visit the show page right now and secure your signed copy from hive.co.uk. And there's a link on the show page. It's learnradio.net/Here Be Dragons. Thank you, Russell, for showing us that book. Smells lovely, doesn't it?
It's enormous. I didn't get this through the letterbox, I have to say. It's gorgeous, absolutely. And Paddy draws so beautifully as well. It's cheeky, it's funny, and I love it. And it's just an amazing book. Really looking forward to that as well. Folks, don't forget that show page there, learnradio.net/Here Be Dragons. Well, today's video and podcast will be up just as quickly as we can. Lickety split, I think they say in some areas. We'll get it up there straight away as well. Everything on the show page, learnradio.net/Sophie Kirtley is the URL of choice. You'll need to write that down. You'll find everything back there again, as well as the podcast and the video as well. Well, thank you so much indeed for listening. Sophie, you've been absolutely fantastic, absolutely amazing. Thank you so much indeed for joining us. You've made our afternoon. We've thoroughly enjoyed and learned so much that we didn't know about the book, and it's just a pleasure. We wish you the very best of luck for your book birthday tomorrow. It's tomorrow, it's out. And Sophie's having tea and cakes with the editor. Lovely. Make sure you chomp away, take a doggy bag away with you, a by my side bag, and don't forget to give them your coffee name as well. I love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for being with us. We have thoroughly enjoyed it. Folks, if you've enjoyed your show and you want to, if you've enjoyed this show and you'd like to show your appreciation, don't forget we are entirely funded by you. You can make a donation at the bottom of the show page on our GoFundMe link. We're grateful for anything that you can give, small coppers or whatever it might be, they all go to help the running of the show. Thank you so much indeed. We will catch you next week. Sophie, thank you so much. It's been lovely to have you. We have thoroughly enjoyed you as well. Until next time,
thank you.
You're very welcome. It's goodbye from her.
And it's goodbye from him.
And it's goodbye from them.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is LearnRadio.net, a radio station project created to reach educators and young people at home and school during the COVID crisis. Bringing you a broad range of cross-curricular topics, author readings, and fun activities to fill your week. Our shows are free to air, although we do have some premium content that's available for purchase. We have yoga breathing exercises and some poetry classes for sale. Visit our shop to find out more. You can also book us for an afternoon live radio show for your school, or hire us for your care home to help connect residents and their families with a live show. LearnRadio.net is powered by Enerton Tiger, who also design and make radio stations for schools. Find out more about Russell's work at EntertonTiger.com.